This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It would be a wolf spot, eh?
On goes Paul. Seaford might yet win it here for Wolves. Blasting the shot. What a goal!
Good evening, everybody. Matt Guy here, joined by Gully and Stu. Much like Wolves, we have left it a little late this evening, so apologies for that, but we are here to discuss the 2-2 draw with Franchise FC Chelsea. Gentlemen, how are we feeling this evening? Are we a little happier than we were after the Brighton shellacking?
Yeah, content, I think is the word.
I think it's impossible to not feel a bit better after that shit show, to be honest. Like, yeah. Surely a draw away at the European Champions is an improvement on what we saw at home to Brighton.
You'd absolutely think that. Firstly, a bit of housekeeping. We are here. Thank you to Pixel Yeti Media and to 90min.com. So we appreciate their support. And thank you to everybody that is tuning in live as well as listening to this in podcast format. If you do have any comments throughout, drop them in and we'll try and get them read out as we go along as well. So, gentlemen, before we go into the lineup, I wanted to mention who wasn't playing. I just wanted to get your thoughts and opinions on something. Pedence wasn't playing yesterday. And from what I understand and what has been put out there, he has kind of been given the option to play. He could go and have injections to play through an injury, has chosen not to. Is there anything to be read into that? Or is that just a case of a player looking after their own well-being at a point in the season where, you know, he doesn't want to risk an injury to hamper his start to next season? Gully, is there anything in that? Is that a standard practice, do you think?
Yeah, I think this sort of stuff goes on a hell of a lot more than we think. We kind of covered this in the preview show, to be fair, but it's ultimately his body. I go back to last season when he picked up an injury kind of second half of the season, and you know, we were disappointed to not have him available for a while. And when he came back, he looked like he was probably rushed back, and he was terrible. He was genuinely awful. He had a bit of a truncated start to this season, but when he came back fully fit and firing, you know, we've seen the best of him. So if it is the case that if he was to play under, you know, medical kind of conditions and a little bit of a caveat, if we're not going to see the best of Daniel Pedence, then he's not even half the player of what we need him to be. So I'd rather he probably look after himself. And, you know, let's be fair, especially with the way results have gone today, we're not in with a shout anymore this season. So I'd rather he recuperate and be ready for the start of next season at this point.
Mm-hmm. Fair. Well, moving on to the playing lineup then for the game. We've obviously, Jimenez has come back into the side along with Johnny. He's come back into the side also. Pedro Neto starts as well. Stu, from your point of view, when you saw this lineup, what were your thoughts? Did you think, did it matter at this point? Did you think we were onto a hiding no matter who we put out? Or were you encouraged by what you saw from the team sheet?
I was amazed that Ait Nouri played. I was convinced that Marcel had returned in some form or other after what happened against Brighton. And he seems to have been the whipping boy a lot of the times this season, whenever anything remotely has gone wrong for him. The rest, it's been such a much of a muchness of nonsense and rubbish for the last month that this is probably the least excited I've got our team lineup. And I checked at 2:02. I mean, normally you kind of, you're refreshing 5 minutes beforehand, getting all ready and excited. But it got to the stage where I thought, well, they're all as bad as each other. Nothing's going to happen. But so when we saw that comes up and it's like, well, where's Dendonka going to play this week? That's kind of what was my thought process behind it. And for the first 50 minutes, I still wasn't sure. But yeah, I mean, it was, again, good to see Neto get a start after what's happened to him. And you think, well, Neto and Jimenez might get something like Raul and Jota used to have. maybe that's going to happen. But again, I wasn't excited, to put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Golly, from your point of view, and obviously hindsight is 2020, what changes would you have made? What would your lineup have looked like? Would it have been any different to what we actually got on the day?
It's funny, isn't it? Because I'm just having kind of read through that. I think you're Patricio, Doherty and Jota away from the team that drew 1-1 at Chelsea back in that first season back in the Premier League with that ridiculous goal where they were 1-2 in all the way up the pitch and whatnot. And we got done in the last minute by Hazard. But yeah, it just goes to kind of highlight how little we've changed the team, doesn't it? But yeah, it just, as Stu kind of alluded to, it was quite underwhelming. It was the safe option, the experienced 11. And after all the talk of Brighton, you know, being a bit of a watershed moment and potentially throwing in some new faces into the team, yeah, it was just a bit like, okay, same old shit. And we'll see how we get on. Thankfully, Chelsea have been pretty crap recently, so maybe we might still pull a result out of the bag, but nothing to get excited about now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when the game started, you could see from the off that it was going to be a game actually where Chelsea were going to let us have chances, but at the same time, as the game went on, some defensively we started to look a little shaky. What did you think of kind of the opening salvo, the opening 10-15 minutes? Stu, you're obviously in the ground. Did you were you thinking what beer can I get in the next 15 minutes or what were you, you know, how was the game panning out for you at that moment in time?
Well, other than the first 2 minutes I was in the ground, the traffic in London was ridiculous. I mean, to be fair, we were down there at 10:30 and we still missed kickoff. But yeah, it didn't look encouraging, did it? It was almost like there's no outlet here, there's no out ball. Every time we get the ball, there's no option, there's no passing, right? Everything was just as stale as it has been. And I thought, well, you've literally had a week to sort yourselves out and nothing has changed at all. And I know we've done it quite a few times over the years when we've soaked up a lot of pressure, but there's always been an out ball. And in that first, maybe the first 10, 15 minutes, there didn't seem to be one.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the talk after the Brighton game wasn't necessarily about ability, footballing ability. It was about heart and passion and desire. What did you get from the start of the game, Gully? Did you see some of the warning signs that we had of a bit of an abject, a bit of demotivated Wolves? How did you kind of, with that in the back of your mind, how did you think that we started the game?
I mean, at halftime, I tweeted saying the game was almost like a game of walking football. It was just off the pace. You know, there was a little kind of ambling around going on. Even Chelsea weren't really injecting anything into the game to suggest that they were going to overwhelm us in any way. You know, Timo Werner was making his runs as he usually does without really threatening. He pulled one save out of Saar, I think, early on. But it was just one of those games somebody needed to kind of grab by the scruff of the neck and do something with, but we haven't really got the team to do that, to kind of shake it up. But it felt like a follow-on from the Brighton game in the sense that everything was a bit tentative. Nobody was really sure of themselves. But, I mean, I go back to Thomas Tuchel's first game when they played us at their place last season. And the first thing he did straight away, after having beaten Chelsea earlier in that season at Molineux, was stop teams playing, stop teams getting out. And you felt there was a vulnerability there. So I feel like things have gone a little bit sideways for them compared to that stage. And maybe his coaching is wearing off a little bit. But it just didn't look... It wasn't an enjoyable game at that point, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't without its drama, I suppose, in the first half at least. We'll bring in our own Peter Walton, Stu Hall here. a couple of the chances
That's the best one we've come up with, actually. Peter Walton. You know that bloke that nobody really wants to hear from?
And here he is.
I'm going on the beer machine again.
To the nation. Well, obviously, there was two contentious decisions in the first half that both fell in Wolves' favour. One offside decision, which is... Well, it's clearly offside. No issues there. But the disallowed goal where Saïss's dramatically fell to the ground as he's lost his man. Where, you know, objectively, Stu, what were your thoughts on that when you saw it? Did you get a good view of it yourself from your seat in the ground and watching it, the highlights since? What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was right in front of us. At the time, I thought, well, that's a foul. Mm. But then at the back of your mind, you think, well, it's Chelsea against us, so it's probably not going to be given as a foul. Because it's almost like we've been accustomed to getting the raw end of things with these kind of situations and these decisions against big six air quote sides. Yeah, I mean, the offside was the biggest problem is with that first half was how long things took.
Yeah, it took ages, didn't it?
I mean, the offside was blatantly offside anyway, straight away with the naked eye from behind the goal. You could see that it was offside, and it took about 4 minutes, I think. Well,
the thing was, they checked two offsides in that phase, and they didn't need to, because the second offside was so offside, they didn't need to spend so much time on the first one. I don't know if there's a sequence of these things, they've got to do it in a chronological order, but it must have felt like an eternity in the ground, much less watching it on some nefarious street.
Yeah, I mean, you had Blake standing next to me. I mean, to be fair to him, he had two bottles of Old Speckled in, gluten-free, obviously, but he still had two, to be fair to him. And he had...
for Blake? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, we've said this before, but the record was when he had... he went point for point with me at Reading in the Championship and then was sick on the coach wheel. and he's never drunk that much again. But yeah, two points or two bottles is very good going for Blake. He was enraged. He started chanting fuck VAR and everything. And what is taking us so long and all this kind of thing. But it was just astonishing. We're just standing around because I think we've said all the year that this is, the last few years, this is the problem with it. Mm-hmm. No issue with the technology at all, but it's the fact that we got morons using it, which I don't know. Obviously, that's the first time I've heard this about that they were checking two offsides, which is baffling. You check the one that led to the goal first, because then if that's fine, then you check the one before if that was an issue. Doesn't make any sense, that one. But the foul was, it looks worse when I watched Match of the Day this morning, it looks worse on telly than at the time. It looked like a genuine push more than a slip and an exaggeration. So in real time, I had no issue with it. But it looks, he's got away with one. Let's put it that way.
There was another kind of unhighlighted decision. Well, it wasn't a decision, and that was the problem, really. And that was Azpilicueta not seeing red. I said at the time, and then in the group chat, Dan had mentioned it as well, that Azpilicueta was already on a yellow when he's checked his man with his elbow for the first yellow. And then he stops. I can't remember who he brings down, but he just brings him down, like with no attempt on the ball, during an attacking phase of play, and nothing's done about it. I mean, should more have been made about this, or is this some kind of, you've worn a tin foil hat in your time, Stu? Is this a top six bias, or what's going on?
So we would have had a player sent off, wouldn't we? It's not even bias. It just happens all the time.
I think,
and you see it in pretty much every game. I mean, it was a yellow card, but the fact that he was already on a yellow, it would have been, it's one of them where you always see every time, unless it's a goal scoring opportunity. If they're already on the yellow and they do something like that, they get a little telling off, to don't do that again.
You
next one you're off. But so I wasn't surprised. But
It's weird, the yellow card, as much as it obviously being a caution, almost becomes a get out of jail free card for the next tackle to a certain extent. And I think that's what he kind of saved him. The other thing I think was, from what I remember, I think it was just before Ait Nouri's chance, where basically Neto loses the ball because he's pulled back. Bolly then picks it up and plays Ait Nouri in. So because the phase has moved on, there's basically a chance to score. I wonder if that has distracted the referee a little bit as well.
Maybe. A strange one. Listen, I'm all up for the making, keeping the game and not ruining the occasion if there's a neutral in these scenarios. But when it's against your team, you absolutely, just one of those things, I guess. But moving, as the game progressed, we go into halftime, we come out the blocks, and then all of a sudden, things fall apart so quickly. And unfortunately, there was one man to blame, and that is Silly Sace. where do we really go with this now? Since he's come back from the African Cup of Nations, he hasn't seemed like the same player, and a kind of a multitude of errors really throughout the game that could have cost us a defeat, and we snatched a draw out the jaws of a defeat, to be fair. Gully, from your point of view, how frustrating is this for you, bearing in mind how crucial he was for our really excellent defensive stats prior to him going to AFCON?
It's quite sad to see, to an extent, because you do feel like he's on his way out now. And whilst we've constantly called for an upgrade on him, he still kind of manfully, made his way and like you say, had a bit of a renaissance this season. He's been really, really good, part of a really good defensive setup. And I still think he has qualities that nobody else in the team can really replace with his distribution from the back, which has also fallen off a cliff in the last few games, to be fair, but might have a bit to do with what's in front of him. I just think this situation, he's known to do rash things. I think back to, behind closed doors games, Man City at home, I think last season, he dives in and gives away a penalty early doors. And you're just like, you've just kind of, they don't need any more help than what they're already going to achieve in the game. And with this one, I just thought, if you're going to try and run the ball out of play, make sure it's not someone like Lukaku who's going to be challenging you, because he's a pretty big lad. He might just muscle you off the ball. That's what ends up happening. And he just panics then, doesn't he, once he's on the ground?
But it's not even a veiled attempt at a tackle, is it? It's just awful. I mean, Stu, it must bore your piss to see this and be a constant thorn in our side when actually we were holding on, defensively. We gave some chances away, of course, but we were still in the game. And then something that isn't a mistake. This is like a conscious decision for him to kind of kick out at him to try and essentially rectify his own error. It's just not good enough, is it?
No. I mean, I've got tablets to stop the piss balling anyway, but it's almost like we need tablets to get rid of Saez now, because it's gone too far. I mean, you can list them off like Palace, where he got himself sent off for no reason at all away. Things like that. And he's throughout his whole Wolves career, he's had patches. Like, even when he was in midfield, he'd have months where he was superb, and then he'd have something mad had happened, and then he'd go for weeks and weeks being shit, and then he'd get replaced. And it's like a cycle of madness that I don't know why it happens. But yeah, Toti got dropped for no reason at all when he was playing well, just to bring him back. And ever since, he's been awful. And there was people genuinely around saying, this is never a penalty and all this kind of rubbish, as you expect. But again, Blake looked at me and said, that'll be pulled back. And of course it will. He just kicked him for no reason. And then when they showed it on the screen, I mean, it was half and half of people said, okay, fair enough. And then the rest said, oh, we never touched him. That didn't lead to him falling over and all this. Well, come on. You can only defend players for a certain amount of time. And it's not like he's a kid, is it? He's, what, 31 now, maybe? It's just ridiculous. Ridiculous decision. It was almost like, I mean, he got lucky earlier in the first half, like we already mentioned. And it was almost like he was waiting to do something in that game. Like something mad was going to happen to him. Like you just, like when we used to have that bet every week, don't we, about in the accumulators booking Saez every week, and some of us made a bit of a killing off that for certain seasons. But because he's got that madness in him, and for a long part of the first half of the season it was gone, but since he's come back, it's been back with a vengeance. And love that comment just on the screen. I do think he probably has played his last. I hope he has played his last game for Wolves, because now, like Gully said, we've got nothing to play for now. Just give Toti a run. If we all go to a back four, which either way he's not going to be a part of. So it's been a brilliant servant. Fair play, 200 plus games, but now it's time to say goodbye. Unfortunately, just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean the sentimentality in football, but at the same time, it just feels like the right time now, doesn't it? Let's be honest. And I'm not here to question the character of the man, but there's, depending on who you believe, you know, the contract situation, he's asking for money that is in the top earner of the club territory, depending on if you believe it or not. And when you consider the options and what we're trying to achieve as a club, I just don't think, I can't see us coming to any kind of agreement that keeps him at the club and wanting to stay and expanding on the project. I hate that term, but there we go. And then let's not forget, he gave away the foul that caused the free kick that ended up with that offside goal as well. It wasn't like a singular occurrence with that penalty either. So it's one of those. But if that penalty was a tragedy, then the next goal for Chelsea was a comedy of errors, if anything, because good God, we don't make it easy for ourselves. Was it 2 minutes later, I think? I mean, fair play to Lukaku. Yeah, it was a stunning finish from him, but we can't after, I mean, Gully, you concede, what do? You just hunker down, you don't do anything stupid, and you ride out the next 5 to 10 minutes, don't you? Or do you? I don't know. And we concede after another 2 minutes. It's got to be one of the most frustrating things when you've still got a foothold in the game to concede a goal like that. What were your thoughts on the second goal for Chelsea?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the most annoying thing for me about it is the fact that Chelsea weren't really that good. Mm. And, you know, we've kind of allowed them to get into a 2-0 lead. You know, make these teams work hard for their, especially, they've got enough quality as it is. Yeah, and notorious we are for making it difficult for really good teams to actually get into the game and get into a lead and create chances. And it's just so not us. You know, as much as we want to be free-flowing, attacking and all that, our absolute comfort blanket is just being hard to beat. And then you see shit like that happen and it's just really disappointing to you. And I mean, I've had it going through my head all week. Yeah, we've been no bollocks FC, haven't we, like in recent weeks? And we'd lost them in that moment because we'd gone 1-0 down. We're probably feeling a bit sorry for ourselves. You know, there's a stupid moment between Cody and Neves. I don't really know who's to blame there, to be honest, because clearly Cody's looking for Dendonka with that pass, but a bit of communication goes awry. Great finish, like you say. And, you know, guess what? Good players will punish you if you're going to, mm-hmm. you know, give them chances. But ultimately, you've got to be so disappointed with yourselves at that moment. It's just, and it felt like another, you know, Brighton moment where it's just like, this is going to go on to be 3 or 4 now at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, why is Cody blasting it so hard in that situation? I mean,
because he was trying to get it past him, though. He wasn't trying to pass it to Neves, was he? So
it was just mad why he was. He could see someone in the way. He's trying to be overly clever for who knows why. And you could see as soon as he went in, he didn't like start ranting and raving at anyone like Kasper Schmeichel style. He fully took the blame himself. But yeah, it was just a fuck up worry, basically.
It was. Wayne here, you know, players make mistakes, they're only human. We feel bad. Sure, players feel worse when their mistake leads to a goal. I mean, we're going to discuss in the second half of this show the fight back, but there was an interesting video that came out of the players getting onto the bus prior to the game. I don't know if you guys saw it on Twitter, and some of the replies were absolutely hilarious from Wolves Twitter, basically saying, "God, look like you're up for it, lads." This, and I was like, "Well, you can't." I mean, the players can't do right for doing wrong, can they? Really, if it's all joking and they're doing handstands onto the coach. They're not being taken seriously enough. If they've got their heads down and they're focused, they're not taking it seriously enough and they're not up for it. I do feel, these are people as well, as higher paid as they are, that shouldn't really factor into it. And we will talk about the mentality of the team in the second half. But I don't know if you guys saw that. Some of the replies were quite golden on a Wolves Twitter level.
It was brilliant, wasn't it? I really thought they should have been channeling their kind of inner Gerard Butler. You know, this is Sparta, you know, as they're entering the coach, you know, probably, 24 hours before they even kick off? Like, just literally, imagine them, like, smashing the bus up before the game or something, just to really make them feel like, look, we're not angry with each other. There's no bust-ups at training. This is how we just take our frustrations out, and we're now going to take it out on Chelsea. But, I mean, they probably had the most boring bus journey, you know, known to man in prospect down into fucking central London or whatever. But yeah, I don't know what people expected them, but Stu, any ideas?
you can, if they're not coming out blood sacrificing each other, wearing their own vials of each other's blood around their necks, then they're not bleeding for the cause, and fuck them off. Yeah, it's, I hadn't seen that, but nothing surprises me anymore at all.
So just a couple of low highlights, performance wise. Jimenez, again, you know, invisible really on the pitch. What do you do? What do you do? Is it a case that now we just ride the season out? You know, you talked earlier about giving Gomez a run out. Is it a case just to give Silva the rest of the season? Because Jimenez, not for want of trying, I don't think, but it's just not happening for him, is it, Stuart, at the minute?
Well, it is for the ones that are trying, because he doesn't do anything at all. And when he gets the ball and he runs with it, he falls over to try and win a free kick. Mm. But his confidence is completely shot. But again, rightly or wrongly, you can kind of put the blame on him as well now, because it's not like he's just come back. He's had a whole season. And he's played like this for Mexico as well. It's not just for us, and because we don't create anything anyway. He's played like this for his own country, and he's just not the same player anymore. We've just got to accept that that's what it is. He had a horrific injury. This happens to people. Very rare people come back from something this horrific to be the same person, let alone the same player. You can't blame him for doing all his like pimping the merchandise and the sponsorship stuff that he does on Insta. I mean, fair enough, he's got to make a buck somewhere, but
he's not making enough money as it is. Is he?
No, exactly. He's got to. He knows his time's coming to an end, so he's getting his dollar while he can. But he's not good enough anymore. Mm. He's had a whole year. He's had a whole season, and let's be honest, he was back. Over a year ago, he had more than a pre-season, more than anyone else, to get fit, to get up to speed. And yet, that takes away the heading, but it doesn't take away his feet. His feet are still there. You can understand him not going for things with his head. Fine. Pretty understandable. But to not put the effort in elsewhere, unforgivable for me. And I think Pricey put the stats about his game on in the group chat as well. And he's just... he's a hindrance more than anything else. And what do you do? We'll give him a pre-season where now he's wearing a thong with an eye patch on the side of his head. Now that might help him. maybe that's what he needs. But is that going to help him in pre-season with his feet? Because that's the problem. He doesn't score with his feet, and he doesn't look like he's in the right positions. Everything about his game is wrong. Well, if it was me, I'd get rid now in the summer. Just again, it's been great parting the ways while we can get something for him. And I think it might have just gone stale for him as well. He might just need a change. And I know they won't because of what he brings to the club.
Let me ask now. Monetary wise, you know, we're not gonna if this was ebbing and flowing like the stock market, his value is pretty low at the moment. You know, as a player, not that you know compared to other periods in his Wolves career, but Gully. With all the signs point that we're going to play at four at the back next season, are you interested at all in seeing what Jimenez can do at a four in the back formation, which tends to mean you have more of an attacking presence and more service behind you? Is it worth keeping him on to see if we can get anything out of him in a different formation?
I try not to be one for outlandish statements, but for a start, I don't think he's done. I don't think he's done at the club. I don't think he's totally finished. But right at this moment in time, I don't want him anywhere near the team. If he's in the team, I don't want him anywhere near the ball. If he gets the ball, I want him to do the most simple thing possible and just give it to another gold shirt, because at the moment, he's failing to do that even. And the common denominator for our two goals at the weekend was that Raul was nowhere near getting involved in either of them. And genuinely, in the first half especially, I think, and Brighton was an absolute, you know, embarrassment of performance from him. We're playing with 10. We are playing with 10 right now. He is so bad. Whenever he receives it, he's losing the ball. When he's looking for a teammate, he's not finding them. It's just absolutely, you know, write the rest of the season off, Raul, because I ain't being funny. You've had a newborn child. Go and spend some time with them. Like, just you know, have a bit of paternity leave. Happy days. You know, honestly, I wish you all the best in bringing him up, you know, in the early parts of his life. But right now, the team just does not work with you in it. He had no right to replace Fabio in the Brighton game at mm-hmm. halftime. Absolutely no right whatsoever. And I'm disappointed in Bruno for making that decision. But when Fabio receives the ball, he's a much more cohesive footballer than Raul Jimenez right now. Whether you think he's going to score a goal or not, I don't care. He's a better player in transition, in possession, working for the team. And that's it, period, at this moment in time.
And people have seen it now as well. And when Fabio Silva started, he came down the touchline to warm up in that first half. He got the biggest cheer of the, up until the last 20 minutes, the biggest cheer of the game and chanting his name. And that's with nothing, obviously, on the pitch, nothing was happening anyway, regardless. But people know what people with a brain can see what Fabio Silva brings to the team. And the fact that the kid is super talented and he just needs a break and he's still 19 years old. And look what he's showing. It's just, and others are giving him sparing his minutes and whatever. It doesn't matter now. It's like you said, he does everything that Raul doesn't do, but Raul doesn't get the stick because he's what he's done for us. It's the whole, look where we come from bollocks again. But it kind of smashed down into one player. But just because he was good 18 months ago and before, doesn't mean you can't criticise him now. I mean, that might be something in it. Just give him time off now. Give him an extended holiday, because it's not happening for him at all, is it? And it is, like you said, it's a detriment to the team.
Absolutely. Well, listen, like a phoenix rised out of the ashes, we managed to scrape a draw out of this game, which we're going to discuss in the second half. We are going to take a very short break just to allow you to refresh, reset, and get a quick drink in if you need one. So we will see you after the break, where we will discuss the goals and have a little preview of our next fixture and Twitter corner as well. See you shortly.
Hi, it's Richard from Wolves Fancast here. Just interrupting today's show before we get back to some questionable opinions and opinionated questions to talk to you a little bit about our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. They are a design agency that put you and your business first, from web design, logo and branding design and marketing. If you have any marketing needs, get in touch with them to find out how they can help you get it right. They are over at pixelyetimedia.com. Now let's get back to a show where we can give you some really forced wordplay, niche cultural references, and maybe even a bit of football talk.
Hi everybody, welcome back to Wolves Fancast. What I want to talk about now is the change at 71 minutes, when hunger and desire kicked in seemingly out of nowhere. And you know, we end up pushing the game, we're pushing Chelsea. It was all one-way traffic at this point. And Trincao scores an unreal goal, really. What a beautiful finish it was. One thing, though, that I think is probably frustrating more than anything is he's obviously got this in his locker, but has he, A, been given the time to show it, and B, has he been guilty of just not showing it enough? Gully, your thoughts on Trincao? First of all, his goal and, you know, what he offers to the team.
I think there's a bigger, wider kind of picture here, just because the substitutions that ended up happening, I think Sace was umming and ahhing about coming off for a while, wasn't he? But ultimately, that was what triggered the formation change that really started to bring us back into the game. Johnny kind of tucked in slightly right centre half, right back. Chiquinho played quite high, with Trincao kind of filtering out to that side as well. And I think what we've learnt, and what probably most people could have seen, you know, for a while, is that when you get players around Trincao and you don't isolate him to go and try and take on 1, 2, 3 men at a time, you know, there's probably a player in there, there's players to bounce off, 1, 2's happening, and just other players around that can distract, you know, defenders to allow him to kind of work his magic a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thinking about the goal specifically, you know, Chiquinho finds him. He then makes a run outside Trincao as he's drifting in towards the centre of the pitch. takes the defender away. Trincao finds that yard of space. Lovely strike. I mean, to be fair, he's shown it a little bit. He's had a few decent attempts at goal throughout the season, but the situation itself hasn't happened often enough because not just because of Trincao being a little bit of a flannel, to be honest, if you're being really fair. Stu, don't raise your eyebrow at me. He's soft as shit. But also because, you know, he hasn't got the support around him to create angles, spaces, bounce off with the teammates and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a little bit of conviction in his play as a result led to a goal. What a finish it was.
Yeah, it was. I think was it against Leeds? Was it Leeds when he hit, not Leeds, was he? When he hit the bar?
Newcastle?
No, not that one. The other one where he hit the bar when he'd scored.
Oh, from like 30 yards out. Yeah.
Yeah, someone like, again, like when he's had time and space. I mean, I said the rogue derivative. Trincao goal is out to everything Chiquinho did. Yeah, fair play. Because look, you said about the space. And I think he suffered. I mentioned this on Twitter earlier as well, that playing him inverted when he's got no right foot whatsoever has been a detriment to him more than anyone else because he has to cut back inside every single time. And yeah, he's cutting in and getting shots off like Bruno wants. But when you've got no one overlapping, you're kind of blunted from an attack point of view, ain't you? And obviously, we'll come on to crosses into the box in a minute. But yeah, I think what we've seen, and yet he's incredibly soft and he's very Steve Corrick alike with his physicality. And the fact that the size of the guy, you think, well, like I've said all season, just give. I wanted to sign him for just to get him toughened up like we did with Neto. Get him a pre-season, maybe get him a sleeve tattoo like Fabio has. And see, we can all get on the Trincao train. It's all here. It's all ready. Well, I think it's probably too late for him now. I mean,
I think it'll take a bit more than a bit of protein powder to get him gunning for fullbacks. He just seems a bit tentative, I think.
Yeah, I think he's probably what you call a mercurial player.
Yeah.
I think he probably suits, if we did go 4-2-3-1, he would suit that roaming role in the middle perfectly. But again, his lack of any kind of substance in his body weight has been his problem all season long. And it's what pisses people off. And me praising him all year and wanting him to stay, yeah, fine. But I do understand where everyone else is coming from because he does need to be a bit stronger. And to be fair, once he scored, he seemed to have a bit about him. He seemed to put himself about. And that second chance was, it doesn't show it on the if there's a replay from behind the goal, that was an incredible block. It was going in. Yeah. And he would have perfectly deserved that goal as well. But yeah, I think it's probably come a bit too late to save him now.
Yeah, the thing in the transfer market is the biggest thing with Trincao now because, you know, Barca have made their position pretty clear on Traore, and that was a big factor in whether, you know, Trincao was going to come and stay with us. Do we need to spend that money on our defensive frailties? Because we're obviously not going to spunk 100 million in this window. Is it better served as spending the money at the back and trying to work with what we've got at the front in order for us to have success next season, do you think?
I think we've got so much talent in attacking areas. You know, it feels like it's blindingly obvious to everyone apart from, you know, our management team to a certain extent that, you know, just having an extra forward in those areas will reap rewards. And mm-hmm. to a certain extent, I can understand why they don't necessarily trust our defence to playing a back four, there's a lack of pace there and stuff. But I just think, you know, death by a thousand cuts, if we can put enough pressure on teams to stop them getting at our defence, mm-hmm. you know, with that attacking play, with holding onto the ball, with keeping possession, then, you know, it really frustrates me that we have to go away and get points against teams like Chelsea, yeah, Liverpool, Man City in the last four games when we could have picked up points against worse teams like Burnley, Newcastle, Brighton, just by being better than them. You know, otherwise we've got to pull the rabbits out of hats. Leicester have done this for a while now where they beat the bad teams. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously they're having a very average season this year, but last year that any time you saw them come up against an average team, you saw them scoring three or four goals, you know, on occasions. And you think, yeah, we should be doing that because we should be trusting our attacking talents to get us out of these situations. We need to give them a little bit more backup there.
Yeah. I mean, one player that we need to talk about, Chiquini all. Obviously, his impact in the game, sensational. Why hasn't he been given more game time? Do we think, is it, you know, just the fact that he hasn't been here longer than some of the players? He hasn't got the trust yet of the manager. Do you think it's a case that now he, you know, he's clearly had an impact so far? Is he like the second highest assister in the team or something stupid like that now? He has to start the next game, surely.
Well, he's got three. He's joint top. He's got three. It says it all.
Mad, isn't it, that?
I mean, every time he's come on, he's looked good. Which, again, like with a bit with Fabio, yeah, managing your minutes. But how old is he? 22? And yeah, he's come from a league that's not as good as the Premier League, obviously. But still, he seems to have adapted very well in his little cameo appearances. And they couldn't live with him. He looked, I know it's me slagging Troyer off again, but having someone cross into the box like that, but not just for the goal, he caused them, they were terrified of him. And he was, within minutes of coming on, him and Martino doing little flicks to each other. For someone who's hardly played, to have that confidence away at Chelsea, when you're already losing, you need to get something out of the game. Fair play to him. I don't know where he's been all season. I mean, I said that on certain other things that I was on, but he has to start. There's no other option. He has to start for me. And if you have to put Huang on the other side,
no,
who knows?
No, how, no, please.
I mean, that where he rolled himself back onto the pitch and then fell over when we were chasing the game, you could do a whole layer on Huang and that whole situation. But yeah, Chiquinho has to start now. Like we said, Chiquinho and Fabio now for the rest of the season. Don't care. They have to start.
Mm-hmm. Gully, any advances on that?
I fucking love this kid, man. I love him. Like, he's, you know, talking about no bollocks FC, he's got enough to share around, hasn't he? Like, he's just absolutely fearless. He reminds me of Jota, like, because he had a pair on him. He'd just take on anybody. You know, regardless of how shit he was playing, or what the first thought in his head is just be positive, do something that will impact the game. And every time he comes onto the pitch, he just wants to impact and influence a game. And yeah, there's a rawness to his game, and he's a little bit, you know, maybe he's just a bit too intense, maybe sometimes, and maybe he needs to take a second at the times to do something. But every time he's played, we've been chasing the result, chasing the game. So that 100 miles an hour kind of attitude is really, really useful. I mean, the cross for the goal, the equaliser, absolute peach. And we haven't seen that quality of crossing at all this season. The only thing I would say is, my brother made a good point to me. He was at the game yesterday as well. There's probably no point in starting him if we're going to not have players in the box, you know, to attack the deliveries that are going to be coming in, or, you know, players in the final third, because then he'll probably just run down blind alleys, much like Traore might have done, you know, to a certain extent. But I just think, again, going back to the point, players like Toti, players like Fabio, players like him, who's going to gain the most from the remaining three games this season? It's them. That, you know, and I'm there for them having every single minute that remains.
Is it to their detriment that he happens to be against City and Liverpool?
Well, you know, he threw Kundalin against Spurs. I know it's not exactly the same, but even still, he's another one who'd benefit more. I mean, you look at him in the other 23s the other day, and he was running the show. He was
good at that level.
The complete opposite of what he was at Newcastle, where he was terrified. I mean, obviously, he didn't have much to pass to it as well, but which didn't help. But he probably played more forward passes in the first 10 minutes of that under-23s game than he did in the whole 90 minutes at St James's. But yeah, he's another one. I mean, how ridiculous Dendonka was at times. But he's another one. He's had his time here. He needs to go as well. But it is what it is. I think Kundal playing has showed that he he's not really that bothered. And when we tell you as well, if the time is right, he'll play him. So I don't see what harm it's going to do against Man City or whatever, just to put him in. Because if you go tried and trusted, you get the first 25, 30 minutes again, like we did yesterday. Mm-hmm. And we know exactly what's going to happen there. So might as well freshen it up.
We do. One other performance I wanted to mention and get your thoughts on, you know, Cody with the equaliser, fantastic scenes in front of the travelling fans. It's been a tough one for Cody in multiple ways, really. You know, we talk about the defensive frailties. Obviously, he's our captain and he's part of that as much as anybody else is. But when things are going right, it's always, okay, we're going to go four at the back. It's going to be, Kilman. And then it's all Highlander. It can only be one. And it's probably going to be Gomez, or we're going to bring somebody else in. And he's the first person that we talk to when we talk about fight and, you know, the mentality to win, etc. And he said in his post-game comments, interviews, he said, you know, we were hurt by the comments that we're already on the beach and stuff like that as well. So I'm really pleased he got the equaliser, to be fair, just to give him that moment to kind of, he be the reason that we equalised. But I know, where do you guys, how much is this sentiment, or how much is this actually, he's still a, you know, massively important player for us?
Well, if we're going to move to a four, we've never seen him in a four, have we? Mm-hmm. So we don't really know. None of us 5 years ago thought he could play in defence at all, let alone in a back five. So who knows? I mean, when he's done that for England, yeah, it's against rubbish, but it's still international football and he still played well in a back four. So if he's got someone commanding next to him, yeah, it leads harsh on Kilman and everyone else. But we've got a bit of squad depth then. And if we've got someone, I'm not saying someone like Ruben Diaz, obviously not him in that level, but someone of that stature, someone who's going to be commanding and equally as good as Cody, but a step up next to him, then who's to say that he can't flourish there? We just don't know. And it would be incredibly harsh to take him out of the lineup. I mean, he's had a few off months, but how many off months has he had in the last 5 years? Not many at all.
No, so, not at all.
For me, he's worth a go at least to start with.
I think the unknown quantity in this, bizarrely, is what it's like without Cody, to be honest, because he plays so often, so consistently, that I don't know what our team would look like without Cody for, say, running three games. And, you know, you can have your one-off cup matches and stuff like that, and, you know, there might be a slight difference, but you're not going to tell. I think with a player like him, with his influence and his organisational skills, all that, you're not going to tell really how much of a difference there'd be until he misses four or five games in a row, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he's become too important to the team to just ignore him if we do transition to a four. And I think this season particularly, he's cut out those absolute stinkers that he used to have. He's even against Brighton, I don't think he was that bad. Everything else has fallen apart around him. But he seemed to have a level of composure and maturity that kind of carried him through to an extent. Now, you could argue that part of his job as captain is to kind of, you know, give the troops a lift when things aren't going well for us. And, you know, we've been behind in so many games this season that you could argue that he hasn't necessarily done that. But again, it's that fear of the unknown of, if he's not there for an extended period of time, you know, what would we do with that? I mean, we have no idea, really, do we?
Yeah, exactly. Stu, we've had a request in the comments for you here. If it'll load for me. How do you sing the Chiquinho song that we posted? You want to give us a little rendition at all for us, Stu?
What song is this? I remember. I don't.
Oh, good.
It's the same as Viva Ronaldo, is it? But it's Viva Chiquinho. I don't know the Viva Ronaldo song.
I don't know. I know that it's a Viva Ronaldo. That's nonsense, eh? But the real one is a cover of Cecilia by Suggs.
Okay.
Which fits that perfectly, but
that is a niche bit of knowledge.
It might be a niche reference, but it works. And you'll all be singing it tonight now.
Go on. I need you to talk me through this. Does he just say Cecilia and we say Chiquinho? Like, is that all it is?
I'm not a songwriter, am I? I'm not saying someone else can do the work. I'm just putting the ideas out there.
Okay, I'll go after YouTube.
Yo, you're breaking my heart, brother.
Oh, I know the one you're on about.
He's not breaking hearts right now. He's not breaking hearts. He's making them, mate. That's all I say.
I like it. Going back to the game, just to wrap up, are there any other performances that you do want to highlight? I think because he's so consistent for us, Sarr, obviously we haven't got a fancy image for him or anything like that, but he kept us in the game with some smart saves, as he always does. Stu, I will give you credit where credit is due. You have been on the Sarr train from the very, very start.
4 years.
4 years?
Yeah, when we got promoted, I said on the preview show, I wanted, before we signed Drewy, I wanted Jose Sarr. And Ben shot me down. Look who's right now, Ben.
This sounds incredibly harsh, but has he got anywhere near any of the penalties that we've conceded? Because we keep conceding penalties, and I wanted to save one. I'm just like, come on, Jose, like just pull one out of the bag.
He's like the Portuguese Peter Shilton, eh? It's just never going to happen.
Right, well, we'll put that game to bed now. Looking ahead then to the midweek fixture against City. It's one of those, really. You know, you say that the season is dead and buried. It's not quite. It is, but it's not quite. City have obviously got the league still to play for and have to pretty much go. I know Liverpool drew at the weekend, but they really still have to go pretty much win every game. I don't think Liverpool will lose one at this point. How do you think, you know, you mentioned, you know, you bleed the youth in, which is fine, but City are going to come out all guns blazing. But this is the exact kind of game where we flourish. What do you think, you know, briefly, how this game will go? Have we got a chance against the, you know, the champions elect?
We could have got something up there if we hadn't been cheated out of it all. Kilman could have won us a point in the last minute at the Etihad. So they're not out of the two of them. The City are the ones that you, even though they've won, is it 5-0 today? Mm-hmm.
Against the greatest Eddie Howe side in history.
Yeah, they're the ones who, if you get them on the right day, then you can get something out of, as we have done in the past. It wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility to happen, but they've shown time and time again when people do run at them, they don't like it, which is why I was kind of tempted with Chiquinho just for that reason. And yeah, mm-hmm. the bodies in the box is an issue, as it has been all season. And I presume that we're not going to do that, and we'll be quite defensive and we'll try and pick our battles when and where. But I'm not going to say we're going to get battered and we're not going to automatically lose, because we've beaten them before a handful of times. So who knows?
I think at their place, if we kept 11 men on the pitch, I think we'd have won, just because they look so average. But unfortunately, we have a scarecrow up top at the moment, basically. So, yeah, we'll see. I was really hoping that they'd be rattled by the whole Champions League knockout. And unfortunately, they seem to have a really easy game today. So they might have kind of knocked that out of their system. But we've proven time and time again, we're a bit of a kryptonite to some of these bigger sides. And I've thought this all along. You know, if Liverpool had to pick a team they, you know, wanted to play in the last game of the season, it wouldn't have been us. If Man City, you know, had to go away and win a game to, you know, to kind of extend their lead, they wouldn't choose to play Wolves, just because there are far easier games for them in this league. And I'll kind of hang on to that a little bit. But like you say, the tried and tested, it worries you a little bit that there's going to be something rash again. And there's no reason for us not to freshen things up and blood those players into what we expect of them, you know, with a view to them starting games next season.
Absolutely. So moving on, well, just before we go into Twitter Corner, there is a couple of games for the other Wolves squads that are going on over the next week. So Wolves women are up against that horrible lot up the road in the Birmingham County Cup final, I think it is. on the 11th, on the Wednesday. It is the same time as the City game, which is an unfortunate timing. But if you are available for the game and you're going to be at the Banksy, so if you're from that part of the world and you wanted to see Wolves Women in the Cup final against the shit, then by absolutely check them out and give them your support. The under-23s are also in the Premier League Cup, is it? I think it's called. Also against the Albion at the Hawthorns on Friday evening. I believe the allocation for the away tickets has already sold out for that. So I don't know how, or you know, how this works really. Can you know the allocation be, you know, it will only be for a small portion of the ground, and I'm sure Albion have only been given one stand maybe or something like that. Under 23 football against against the Albion, Stu, have you ever encountered that before? Did it ever have any of the bite of the senior fixture?
Not in the, well, I don't watch many under 23 games anyway. I'll watch them if I'm around and I can. But I went to, like, back in the day when they used to have the reserves at Molineux, it did kick off a few times against Albion when we played them, because they'd have like they'd have 20 or so fans that would come and watch, and it wouldn't be on the realms of possibility for it to kick off there. And it happened a handful of times fighting over the Bovrils. But it's any game against them. Like, it's inbred into every team that we've got. So it'll be, even the esports lads will get it eventually. They'll understand.
Yeah, imagine. To be fair, well, I mean, to both teams, I mean, Wolves Women clearly having a really great season. Under-23s, when I've watched them recently, been scintillating football to watch. And I feel like they've kind of carried the can for the club while the first team has been terrible. when we've been, you know, watching the games on YouTube, you know, in terms of entertainment and attacking football on offer, really, really enjoyable. And it's a good sign of the overall health of the club that, you know, the kind of the side shows are doing so well. It's really good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll move on to Twitter Corner then to wrap up. So we've only got a couple here today that we're going to show in the graphics. So firstly, Rob Cartwright, if we switch to a back four, what would be your preferred formation? Who plays in what position from the current squad, and who would you like to come in to fill the gaps? Stu, formation wise, what would you like to see? And are there any people that are an absolute cert in certain positions in that four at the back?
I think like we just talked about, I think you got Cody and then one other, at least to start with, just to see how he deals with it. I mean, if you bring in a superstar defender in, we've got more than enough to kind of see which one plays with him best. I'd go Kenny Jackett 4-2-3-1, bring him back. Who our Michael Jacobs would be, that's anyone's guess. I mean, it could be Gibbs White. He could play there, but the majority of the time at Sheffield United, he's played wide, which we all said, oh, he can't possibly play there. It's not his position. But it's one of them. He's had it. If it, like we've said over and over again, if it wasn't him and it was just some other English under-21 player ripping up the championship, winning player of the year, we'd be clamouring over him, wouldn't we? So if we've got him coming back in the summer, he can go on one of the wide positions. He could have a fluid three, couldn't he, behind it? You could mix it up. It gives you options, and you've got someone in a 10 position to actually get in the box as well. Like Gully said, we've got players who could actually play that from a forward point of view. It's just the defence and, again, midfield. So, where...
Hear me out. Let me reel it off for you. Sign goal, Semedo, Cody, Kilman, Johnny at the back, Neves, Moutinho in front of him, Gibbs White, Pedence, either or, right wing or number 10. Neto wide left, Fabio up top. That sounds exciting to me.
Yeah.
And then Fosun don't need to spend a penny.
Don't need to spend a penny.
There we go.
Try against Norwich.
They're going to cite this podcast in their transfer dealings at the end of the transfer window, aren't they?
We heard the fans wanted this, so we're going to give the fans what they want.
You know what's going to happen now? The people are going to blame us, thinking that we know what's going on again.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're just a mouthpiece for Fosun. So we'll have to put pictures of Vinny the Criminal out again to kind of counterbalance it all.
But we never knew about any bus stuff at the club.
No, we didn't. King Wolf 84, two Wolves players in Connor Ronan and Morgan Gibbs-White have been getting rave reviews and player of the season awards from the clubs they are on loan to. What does the future hold for them? Personally, for him, sell Ronan and keep Morgan Gibbs-White. Thoughts on that one, Gully? Obviously, Morgan Gibbs-White especially is getting headlines for absolutely tearing it up for Sheffield United, but we've seen this before. And then the second he puts on the old gold, it doesn't quite go the way. But some would argue, actually, he's never played in the position that he shines in anywhere else. What do you think with those two players? Is it their opportunity? And is it the final opportunity for Morgan Gibbs-White to flourish in Wolves colours?
You'd probably say so. I mean, I feel like it'd be quite cruel on Conor Ronan to keep kind of putting him out on loan now. I guess he's... He's played his way into, I don't know, someone like Celtic or Rangers potentially taking him because he's done so well in the SPL and finding a home there. And to be fair, that's a really good move for him, I think. So maybe we coerce one of them to put in a £5 million bid. And yeah, you probably could be quite pleased with that. For Morgan, I've seen people throwing around figures like 20 million quid, you know, and snapping people's hands off for it. While I appreciate that would probably be a nice offer, I don't see the reinvestment of that money for like replacement going well. So I'd like to see him come back and play because I think he's got a lot to offer.
Fair. Stu, final thoughts on Morgan Gibbs-White in terms of what he can do? Does he come straight back in next season, straight into the 11 or at least in the squad? Or actually, you know, if we were offered a good sum of money for him, bearing in mind we're on a sell-to-buy potential outlook, what do you do?
Well, if he comes back in pre-season and plays the way he has for them, then we ain't going to get a player, like we said, we ain't going to get a player of that ilk for 20 million, am we? It's just not going to happen. So I think, and people say, oh, it's only the Championship. It was only the Championship for Mason Mount as well. Then he went straight into a Chelsea side that got into... was on an amazing run under Lampard. So it works. People use the Championship thing as an argument for either side of it. If you want to use it as a good league to develop and have a good run of games, at last, hardly hampered by injury, which has been one of his problems as well, fine. He comes back, I'd put him straight in the team. Why wouldn't you? If he was in the team that we got promoted with, playing the way he is, he'd be still on the team sheet, wouldn't he? So what's the difference?
True. And finally then, very own Richard Hobbs, with the Commonwealth Games around the corner, which Wolves players would you have competing in more niche events?
I'd have to go out and research what kind of events actually go on at Commonwealth Games.
I assume it's just Olympic standard, the Olympic Games, I guess.
I'm at a bit of a loss. Don't know. Jose Sarr rides a bike. Is it like a BMX competition or something? I feel like there might be a BMX.
I think as time has gone on, I think they've tried to introduce like skateboarding and BMX and stuff like that. And he does seem like our resident radical dude, as I'm sure he sees himself. You know, I know he's not got the build for it, but the way that, you know, Saith does like to just grab onto a man and just pull them down at all costs. That's essentially sumo wrestling. You've got the physique for it. So
something like that.
But Stu, any take on that? Is there any players you think may excel in another field?
I mean, we could stretch this a little bit and say, no, George Yadokobe is retired after 19 years as a pro. Getting back in the shot put team. You wouldn't want to argue with him, would you?
No, you wouldn't. You absolutely
scored
wouldn't.
On his final game.
I was going to say, he scored on his final game. So that's a nice send off for him as well. I remember when he had like that, an appearance at Molineux, and he did a full lap of honour that went on into the second half. He walked around the whole of the stadium. It was hilarious. But there we go. So thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in today, whether that's been on YouTube and Twitter Live or whether you listen to this in the week. We really appreciate your support. Thank you very much to Pixel Yeti Media and to 90min.com as well for their support. And if you want to check out our socials, please do. Wolves Fancast on the social media. Gully, he has a fantastic series of his tactical analysis, which is really in-depth and explains in a lot more detail than I can about how we've played and the tactical side of things. We have our our game previews as well. And in the closed season, we are in negotiations about what kind of content that we're going to be doing as well, bringing back a couple of old favourites like Filmcast, mental health episodes as well, stories from the pack. There's going to be a lot going on in the closed season as well. So make sure that you're subscribed and have your notifications on to get all the information about that. But for now, Stu, if you want to say goodbye.
Yes. Enjoy your week, everyone. Goodbye.
Gully, if you want to say goodbye.
Why is it funny when Steve says something like
that? I didn't say anything wrong then.
You know what? I think it's,
you know what? You know what? No, I'm going to shill cage for you now. Gully, you've bought this on yourself. If you want to go and listen to three bald blokes from Wolverhampton and talk about films and argue with each other about Marvel, go over and find us over a cage fighting pod.
To be fair, you're being quite cruel to yourself there because I can see a little bit sprouting on top at the moment.
Yeah, but the reason why I shout because there's nothing there. Look,
there's always turkey.
the thing is, Stu's like being completely sincere when he's like, bye everybody, have a great week. Like, he's being sincere. He just sounds hilarious coming from Stu, that's all.
I can feel this beer machine as well if you want.
You've had too many of them, pal. Thank you everybody, and have a great week, and we'll see you after the City game. Take it easy.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flashing.